The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Fred Brack from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. If you'd like to talk to them, they can be reached at 919-781-1973. It's time now to return one more time to the March 2018 edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. We've been reading about the legendary and landmark pies of North Carolina, but we've covered pretty much everything there, and so we're going to do the fun thing for me, and that's start back at the beginning in the features section of Our State and talk about towns and artists and books and things like that in relatively short articles. We're going to start first under the We Live Here Downtown section and read an article about Concord. This centuries-old mill town in Cabarrus County is ushering in a brand new era, proving past and present can live in perfect harmony. It opens with a nearly full-sized picture. It's the side of a brick building. You can see that it was repaired once or twice and probably could stand a little more repair, but generally speaking, the bricks are nice and red. And it says Scotty Stores, with a picture of a Scotty dog with a little Tam on top. And below that, a gigantic Coca-Cola ad. Huge! And it's a very old expression. It's not used anymore. Very old logo for them. And I know this because I used to be on the radio back in the late 1960s and early 70s, and we would say, things go better with Coke. And that's what it says on the side of the building. And there's a picture of a woman with a not-so-modern hairdo holding up a bottle of Coca-Cola. And there is a young woman walking by on the sidewalk, and she's dwarfed by the size of this sign. The caption says, Concord Coca-Cola mural, painted in 1966, see, I got the time frame right, was restored in 2011 and inspired 10 similar restoration projects across the state. That was fun to see. Well, let's go with the article then. Concord was built on cotton. In the 1800s, the crop helped turn downtown into a bustling center of industry, especially on busy court days when Union Street was filled with lawyers and clients, farmers and townfolk. Today, inside the old county courthouse, former offices are filled with pottery instead of paperwork, and the courtroom features a stage instead of a judge. Now home to the Cabarrus Arts Council, the building exemplifies Downtown Concord's comeback. Its history is preserved and tended to, even as it's reborn as something new. Take a stroll, and you'll find the well-loved mainstays. But you'll also find once-empty storefronts now occupied by sweet boutiques and freshly made gourmet donuts worth waiting in line for. Nearly a 100-year-old textile mill is alive once more, with shops, breweries, and food trucks. Yet, like Concord itself, its beams and bricks, its rich history, remain intact. There are numerous pictures here. This looks like the top of the town hall. And the caption says, the Cabarrus Arts Council, located in the 1876 courthouse left, features various exhibits and even a 227-seat theater. It's the passion project of its president, Noel Rhodes Scott, who's shown here, who is helping develop a community love of the arts. On the next page, boy, this is an old thread reel dispenser, bobbin, what do they call those, bobbins, the little wooden things. It says American Thread Company on the front, and there's three tiers inside, and then there's a, looks like for cigar dispenser right next to it. The caption says, what's old is new again. The historic Hotel Concord, which is shown in a different picture, built in the early 1900s, now features apartments and event space. A short drive away, the historic Gibson Mill is the now the home to The Depot, a sprawling 88,000-square-foot antiques market, the largest in the Southeast, with countless treasures like the cigar box and vintage sewing kit shown above. And now, over leaf, some more pictures. Clockwise, from the bottom it says, order the Courthouse Club at Two Gals Kitchen on Union Street before getting dessert at Cabarrus Creamery, a Concord institution since 1928. Top it all off with libations at Cabarrus or High Branch Breweries, both in the old Gibson Mill. Now, in the lower left is two hands holding two different ice cream cones. One is a variation of the ordinary sugar cone, and the other is one of those wonderful waffle cones. The sugar cone holds a double scoop of chocolate, and the waffle cone looks like it's holding pistachio or mint, maybe. It's pure light green. And then there's a pictures of three different kinds of beers, a light, a medium, sort of almost a reddish one, and then a very dark one, which says Cabarrus Brewing Company on it. And then people sitting inside a building with a tall brick wall, very light-colored brick in this case, and the sign says High Branch Brewing Company. And finally, a sandwich with a toothpick through it to hold it all together, lettuce and cheese and meats, and I can't tell what's on the bottom, maybe pickle or something like that. Sounds good. There's an ad here. Let's see. Oh, it hasn't happened yet, but coming up really close. Let's see. It's actually the day that this is supposed to air, Wine Dinner at the Farm at Old Edwards, Friday the 27th, 7 o'clock. That's the Old Edwards Inn. And then the next article under We Live Here, Farm Tour, Rutherfordton, Free Range Life. Larry McDermott and Anita Solomon gave up a fast-paced life to rule the roost on a small farm in the foothills of North Carolina. He wears a tan cap, a fleece camouflage L.L. Bean jacket, and a pair of DeWalt safety sunglasses. His flannel shirt, checkered black and gray, is untucked. His jeans are a faded blue. At 69, Larry McDermott looks every inch the outdoorsy workman someone would chafe at neckties, and ergonomic chairs. Right now, he's standing next to an expanse of daikon radishes, all lush and leafy, as dozens of chickens cluck and peck at the neighboring pen. We do a lot of cover crop planting to enrich the soil, he says of the radishes. He and his wife, Anita Solomon, my wife's the green thumb, also plant buckwheat, Austrian peas, and crimson clover, all of which are really good for the soil, he says, but they're great for the honeybees. Here at Hardscrabble Hollow Farm, a 40-acre breath of fresh air on the South Carolina state line in Rutherford County, Larry and Anita are living according to a back-to-the-land ethos. They tend 8 beehives for honey, 400 blueberry bushes for teeth-staining summer sweetness, 50 laying hens for eggs, dozens of free-range chickens and turkeys for meat, and a family of Nubian dairy goats for milk, which they use to make cheese and soap. On this crisp, clear afternoon, the mountains unspool across the western horizon, their ridgelines thrown into sharp relief by the vast blue sky. We love that, Larry says with a hint of awe. Despite his attire and his Chevy Silverado pickup with Eat Local bumper stickers, Larry long wore white collars and worked in places like, wait for it, New York City. He had a fast-paced career as an Associated Press reporter and news executive with stints in Manhattan, Minneapolis, and Detroit. Anita, too, was something of a globetrotter, having been raised an army brat. But suits and ties do chafe and bind, and both Larry and Anita were ready to put down roots somewhere a little more rural. We both wanted to farm, Larry says. I grew up on a farm in Arkansas. For me, it was sort of going back to the soil again. They looked at retiring out west somewhere, but the South kept summoning, and North Carolina, with its mountains-to-coast geography and ample farmland, was especially alluring. We wanted to get back to small-town America, and certainly found that here, Larry says. After buying the farm in 2011, they found out what it was like to really work. Farming. Idyllic as it sounds, is a back-breaking job, especially if your farm is organic. We don't use any chemicals of any kind, Larry says, so that means we're battling weeds all the time. It also means that all of Larry and Anita's birds are grass and veggie fed, and that they receive no antibiotics and nothing genetically modified. As a result, their hens are egg-laying dynamos. The hens roam about the yard, bobbing their heads and clucking. Each drops about 5 eggs every 7 days in the spring, summer, and fall, the high laying season. Most of the shells are brown and often speckled, but the Americona, Americana chickens lay blue eggs, the leghorn chickens lay white, and the Easter egger chickens, their common name, lay large eggs that range in hue from blue to green to aqua to pinkish, you know, like Easter eggs. And who knew poultry could have such personality? Some of Larry and Anita's chickens have names, such as Anna and Elsa, and a rooster called Foghorn, and all have a habit of trying your patience. As a professional writer, Larry's Just Grazing blog, posts on the farm's website, are filled with amusing thoughts and anecdotes. Chickens are smart and cagey, he writes. Try herding them, and you create more pandemonium than recess on a schoolyard. If you're trying to catch one, they play a barnyard version of the kids' game tag. Cam Newton should have moved so quick. And yet, he adds, chickens are like potato chips. Once you have a handful, you want another handful. Just as they sell their blueberries, their milk, their honey, and their goat milk soap, Larry and Anita sell their eggs to the community. It didn't take long for word to spread, and pretty soon families wanted to drop in to pet the goats and pick the berries, too. We didn't try to be a destination, Larry says. We just wanted to be farmers, but we like to see people soaking in the farm life. Like his flannel, Larry wears his role well. Looking around his piece of western North Carolina countryside, he sizes it up like this. You know, it all just fits. Written by Brian Mims, Hardscrabble Hollow Farm is a Rabbit Moffat Road in Rutherford Ton, way down there in the southwestern corner of North Carolina, kind of almost directly below Asheville on the line there. You can reach them on the web at Hardscrabble Hollow Farm. And you are listening to our state magazine on the Triangle Radio Reading Service. If you have any comments on our program, call the studios 919-832-5138. Here's a short article under We Live Here, Gathering Place, Lexington Rhythm and Brews. At High Rock Outfitters, explorers, beer enthusiasts, and music lovers find the perfect place for a tune-up. What an outdoorsman or woman really wants at the end of a long day on the trail of the lake, Chris Phelps says, is a place to drink a beer or have a cup of coffee and talk about the day's adventures. So, when this avid outdoorsman revamped an old store on Main Street in Lexington and opened High Rock Outfitters, he knew the merchandise part of the business was just a means to an end. He had no idea, though, that he'd have to get laws revoked, walked and passed to get craft beer flowing behind the high bar plastered with bumper stickers and decals. Eventually, price tags and displays disappeared and bands were booked, but the name remains the same. On Tuesday nights, a group of beer lovers gathers to discuss theology. Wednesday is trivia night. Weekends are for live music of every persuasion. Just look for the old school backpacks, wicker camp chair, and BSA canteens in the window. Amble on in and talk about your trials, or trails. That's what the text says, as written by Susan Stafford Kelly. Boy, BSA took me back there. I suppose that's Boy Scouts of America canteens, and I did indeed have a big one. 13 South Main Street in Lexington. They're on Facebook under the name High Rock Outfitters. And now, Overleaf, We Live Here, Shopkeep. In Duck, the Book Club. Sip coffee and browse bestsellers in a cozy former hunting cottage on the Outer Banks. Duck Cottage used to be over there, says owner Alan LeHue, as he points toward Currituck Sound, less than 100 yards away. Now it's part of a boardwalk shopping center, which didn't exist when the 1,000-square-foot cottage was built in the 1920s. The town of Duck, in fact, didn't exist then either. Originally, the quaint cottage was home to the Powder Ridge Gun Club. What did they hunt, you ask? Ducks, LeHue laughs. Since 2002, it's been home to around 2,000 books. Buyer Jamie Anderson tapes handwritten recommendations to the shelves and the best coffee in town. Try the cold brew or snag a bag of coffee beans, like the customer favorite Coconut Crunch. Though the coastal community thrives on tourism, LeHue keeps his business open every day except Christmas, so locals always have a nearby porch where they can read the paper or watch the seagulls. We see the same faces year after year, LeHue says. When one young man first came in, he'd get one of our lattes, with no espresso, and he couldn't see over the counter. Now he's taller than me. Written by Emma LaPerouque. The book club is on Duck Road in Duck, and you can find them on the web at duckscottage.com. Big ad for the spot Pinehurst here. Man and woman walking with cups of coffee, and they're dressed in white bathrobes. It says aromatherapy begins well before you enter our doors. The sweet scents of southern magnolia, fragrant gardenia, and longleaf pine engulf you when you arrive at Pinehurst. Then our spa transports you to another place and time. The spa-scape is $290. There's a footnote, of course, which I'm not going to go into. And the accommodations are at the Holly Inn, and you get a 50-minute spa treatment, an overflowing buffet. Breakfast buffet and 20% discount on spa retail. Ah, my favorite author from our state. This is Drew Perry talking about his kids under We Live Here, a father and his two sons pieced together a patchwork of North Carolina memories, adventures with Toad and Wee. Strike it rich. Young prospectors head to Hidden Night, hoping for gemstones. Yet the most priceless nugget they uncover may be the lesson that value is in the eye of the beholder. Written by Drew Perry. I know what we should do, the Wee says. He's in pre-K these days and given to announcements. We should bring an axe with us and hammer down lots of rocks. Good idea, right? The Toad, my 7-year-old, says, we should bring home clay and microwave it and put it in the shape of a bone. You know, like microwave it up so the dog can look at it and feel safe. Also, do you think we'll be rich? The Wee digs into the closet for his shoes. Except I'm worried now, he says, because I lost my worry rock. We'll just find another one, the toad says, grabbing his jacket. We'll find you one in the mine. We'll find you one worth $8,000. They both stop, look at me. Could such a thing be possible? I don't know, I tell them, and it's true. I've never been gem mining before either. What I do know of all this is what I've seen on the roadsides. Big red letters spelling out rubies on whiteboards, sideline operations selling soft serve ice cream, maybe a gift shop. Emerald Hollow Mine in Hidden Knight, however, seems the realest of real deals. No loud signage, a fine coat of red clay on every surface, mining permits required for everyone older than three. I asked Taj Wright, who says working at the mine is his dream job, he's been a rockhound since he was two, what the best bet for the boys of boundless energy are, yet limited attention spans. Well, he says, a 5-gallon bucket filled at the creek or the mine can weigh as much as 100 pounds. He looks down at them, and they stare back wide-eyed. We sell buckets right here at the sluice, though. How does that work? The toad asks. Wright grins. Let's get you guys set up, and I'll show you. We purchase something called a super bucket, which is enriched, meaning the kids are guaranteed to find things. And find things we do. The boys scoop hunks of damp clay into wire trays, shake the trays in the chilly sluice water, and nearly every time, shiny somethings remain once the clay washes away. What is it? The wee asks me, holding up a nickel-sized black rock. What did I find? Bailey Watt, whom the rest of the staff calls the geologist, wanders down the line. That's tourmaline, she says. Is it valuable? He asks her, my 4-year-old captain vocabulary. Do you like it? She asks. He nods gravely. She smiles. Then it's valuable. Watt will later appear in front of the kids with tiny emeralds and flecks of topaz, saying, when there are kids here, I bring them the good stuff. That's Junior Ducharme's basic bearing, too. Once we reach the bottom of the bucket and take our stones to a picnic table to sort out what we found. He has the kids play rock, paper, scissors to determine who gets to go first, and then he lines up the largest stones, naming them Aventurine, Mica, Pink Rhodolite, Blue Sapphire. That's a huge emerald, he says, of one of the toad's finds. And those are some nice big garnets, he says, polishing the gems with his thumb and placing them gently in the wee's hand. North Carolina is the perfect spot, Ducharme tells me, while the kids begin rock mining in the gravel of the parking lot. Heat and pressure, he says, form the gemstones, and erosion always brings something new to the surface. Metaphors of bound at the emerald mine. My boys, who think they might be rich, start making plans to use their gems as currency at a big box realtor of various consumer goods. The adults smile, laugh a little, but they're no different. We're prospectors here, all of us, filled with hope. There might be gold in them thar hills, or emeralds. And here come both boys now, rocks in their hands, wanting to know, what is it? What did I find? I don't know, I tell them, but let's go see. And now we just got a few minutes left. I have to check to see whether, well, I think we have time to read this article because it's only a page. It's under We Live Here Again, Folks, this time is the subheading, in Kernersville, Perfect Harmony, Jake and Jill Gardner. Jill Gardner was in the 7th grade when she wrote in a school assignment, I believe that opera will become a very important passion in my life. She had just seen her first opera, The Marriage of Figaro, at Piedmont Opera in Winston-Salem. Looking back now, those words seemed prophetic. Jill and her husband Jake are both renowned professional opera singers. Jake is a bass baritone. Jill is a lyric spinto. They met at Tri-Cities Opera in Binghamton, New York, the same company that captured Jake's attention at 18 years old, and later moved to Kernersville, not far from Jill's hometown and Piedmont Opera, where they have since performed several times. These days, they travel all over the country, performing in everything from Tosca to La Traviata to A Streetcar Named Desire. "We are really each other's severest critics," Jake says, "but also," Jill adds, "our most abiding support." So writes Katie King. And we're just about done here, but we can go back to the beginning of Our State magazine, where they have a mini pictorial. And we start in western North Carolina, in Swain County. The highest point is in Great Smoky Mountains National Park, is a shared space. The 6,643-foot Clingman's Dome straddles Swain County in North Carolina and Sevier County in Tennessee. The peak was named for a North Carolinian, Civil War general, senator, and regional booster, Thomas Lanier Clingman, and its 45-foot tall cement observation tower, built in 1959, was designed by a Tennessee architect. Here, where North Carolina meets Tennessee, millions of visitors from all over get to share a view of the mountains. This picture looks like it's taken right at dusk. The sun is setting. It's very blurred behind a cloudy, bright orange and yellowish sky. You can see the outline of the mountains, and the lower part of the sun must be just dipped below there. There's just this blast of light coming from over there. As you get higher, the sky turns to purple and then blue with wisps of spotty clouds. And on the left, really in profile, is the tower. We see the front edge of the tower, and then it obviously comes out in a big freestanding circular position. Must be a cold day, because there's a profile of a young man standing right at the edge looking at some kind of a plaque, which probably tells what you're seeing when you look straight out, and he has a hoodie on. And there's three people standing back further, and it's just a little bit about their stance and the way their collars are turned up. You're getting the feeling they're saying, "Burr, I'm not going out there to the edge with you." Overleaf, this is North Carolina Central. We are in Richmond County. Stands of leggy longleaf pines stretch for nearly 65,000 acres across the Sandhills game land in northeastern Richmond County. And what we see here is a lot of brown grass and some young pine trees sticking up where maybe there was a fire or something, because there's some older pine trees in the background, and and the sun is shining brightly between some of the stalks, the bodies of the trees in the background. Well, we've run out of time for this time's episode, because today's episode of Our State, which is probably good because I'm starting to stumble with my words. I hope you enjoyed it, and you'll listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired, and the podcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. Any comments or questions? Call us, 919-832-5138. So long until next time.